happy 2024. Thank you so much for joining us on the Cycle Podcast today. So grateful that you're here. Just a quick few housekeeping items. We switched platforms, so some of the episodes you may see duplicates and or they may be out of order. I apologize for that. Working on getting that all fixed. We should be pretty close. But I am hoping now that you'll be able to watch the video version on Spotify in addition to YouTube. So very exciting times here at The Cycle as we are enhancing our platforms. And don't forget to follow us on social media, which are linked in the show notes. On to today's show, I chat with Sam, who's from North Carolina in the US. We chat about how endometriosis has affected her life and actually has influenced her career and her two businesses that she has now. I found it to be a very inspirational chat. I hope you enjoy it. We do talk a little bit about fertility and pregnancy loss, so just wanted to give you a heads up that those are included in this episode. As always, I really appreciate you being here. Thank you so much for listening and supporting The Cycle, and I hope you're feeling okay today. Take care. Hi, everyone. Just a quick note. We've had some audio issues with this episode, particularly my audio. It seems like my microphone wasn't working, so I am particularly quiet in this episode. So I apologize that I may be very quiet and Sam may seem a little loud. So just wanted to give you a heads up on that. I'm going to see if we can try to optimize and fix it, but I wanted to let you know about that. And I apologize, always trying to do a better job with the technology.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this month's Cycle Podcast. On today's show, we have Sam coming to us from North Carolina. Welcome to the show, Sam.
Thanks so much for having me.
So grateful to have you. We'd love to learn just a little bit about you. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I originally grew up in Massachusetts. I'm very northerner at heart. I lived in northern Maine, and then I moved to North Carolina about 6 years ago. And I am a fertility coach. I help couples navigating fertility challenges, and I also own a matcha company. Both happened because of my experience with endo and my long journey to finding what healthy looks like in my body. And when I realized that it could be different, I really wanted to dedicate my life to showing people that they can thrive and not just survive when you have a chronic invisible illness.
I look forward to hearing more about both of those businesses and learning about what you're doing. It sounds really exciting. So awesome. I can't wait to hear more about that. Well, how did, you know, as you mentioned, you just mentioned this journey that you've been on with endo. How did it start, or what do you remember, like, initially, like, that something maybe wasn't right?
Oh my gosh, I don't know if I remember ever thinking that things were right. So from my, you know, my childhood before I even memories I had, my mother would tell me stories about, you know, how I would eat dirt because I was so anemic and my digestive issues were so strange. And everyone thought, like, there's nothing wrong with me. You know, from day one, the tests were coming back normal. And then I got my first cycle at 10. And it was super heavy and it was super painful. And I started experiencing more GI issues. I started experiencing, like, insomnia and anxiety and stress and, like, so many things that, like, everyone just kept putting off as, like, puberty and periods. And these things are normal. I would go in and out of the ER when I would have, like, the really chronic flares. And I would be told everything from, once I was told I had, like, an appendix that flared but cured itself. And then the other time it was, oh, you're just a teenager complaining of gas. And so it was just one gaslit experience after the other. And I thought that I was just crazy. You know, I thought that I was a hypochondriac, that I was just complaining. And it took a really long time for me to understand that this was a real serious, concern for my health. And I was slowly diagnosed with things. I was at 18, about 6 months apart, I was diagnosed with Lyme disease from New England, super common. And then celiac disease, which, you know, I never received the traditional testing, but I went gluten-free and my life completely changed. Lost 30 pounds, two shoe sizes. Now I wonder if it was the endo versus the celiac, but who knows? I'm never going to eat gluten anyways. And I was still sick, even though I did everything to address both of those. Like, it was like they were clearing the way to other symptoms. And then I wasn't diagnosed with endo until, gosh, I had actually been trying to get pregnant for several years and no one brought it up. They did all their fertility tests and they're like, you're fine. Everything's normal. Your eggs are like a 20-year-old's. And it wasn't until I was in absolute debilitating chronic pain in 2020, rocking back and forth in child's pose any time of the month, that I was talking to another, you know, endo warrior, and I didn't know anything about endo. No one had ever brought it up to me. It had never come up on my Google searches. And she was like, well, this is what it sounds like you have. And I immediately did some digging. I read the book Beating Endo, and there's another book that was written for teenagers. I can't remember the name of it, but I read that one too, and I was just crying the whole time I was reading them both.
Yeah. I get it. I mean, I totally understand that. So backing up to like getting these diagnoses and all that, mm-hmm. like middle school, high school, what was that like with endo and these other, you know, if you have, you may probably do have celiac too. I know you, you're not really sure, but like, I feel like when you have endo, you have, there's a lot of things going on.
Yeah.
It's just like the inflammation and other like autoimmune disorders seem to like to hang out when you have endo, you know, because I have Hashimoto's, but I know someone else who has Lyme and also has endo. And, you know, so it's just, I know people that have POTS and endo. I mean, it's just very interesting. But going back to my like original question, so like what was like middle school and high school for you? You know, like in the beginning, like did you miss things? Like tell me a little bit about that time and going to the doctors and what was happening.
Yeah. So my biggest middle school memory is it's heartbreaking to me because as an adult, I'm like, why? How did this happen? So, you know, middle schoolers are they're crazy. They're hormonal. And there was like a pantsing epidemic happening at my school. And so everyone was like pantsing each other. And so like any loose pants, like sweatpants or comfortable pants were no longer allowed. You had to wear like jeans and things with belts and stuff. And obviously as someone undiagnosed with a chronic invisible illness, like there was times that I couldn't wear clothes like that. And leggings weren't really in then. I'm dating myself a little bit. So like those weren't really an option. Why would they not? I know, right? Even though like sometimes those are even painful for endo belly, but they weren't an option. And my the vice principal of the school called me into his office one day because I was wearing what I could wear to function at school. And he called my mom in too, and he was just like, you know, we have some funds if you need to buy pants. Yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
How mortifying like, for like, you're already going through this like pain and uncomfortable and that age is like the worst age ever.
Yeah.
How terrible.
Yeah, it was awful. It was so awful. And I was still like in this point where I was just like not believing that my pain was worse than others. Like I was just like, you know, and so I felt guilty and I felt embarrassed that like I couldn't deal with what all these other menstruating people at school could deal with.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And then as you started to get like to go into high school and things like that, did your pain get worse? Did you get, I know you said, you know, anemic and like stomach and all of those things. So like, were you noticing like things were getting progressively worse as you were like progressing in high school?
Yeah, in high school, the bleeding got really, really bad to the point where, like, I slept on one of those postpartum, like, reusable mats that they give women in the hospital. It was regular that I would bleed through things. I would wear, like, the heavy pad and the heaviest, you know, tampon and still be so stressed the entire time. I also started to get headaches that I now know were migraines, but then I didn't know that. You know, I was just like, oh, I'm just, again, like, exaggerating things. My body was really, really weak. I was often really tired. I sprained my ankle several times and needed to have like reconstructive surgery on it. There was all these little things that were happening that I was just like, why do I feel so much sicker than my peers? And they're off playing, you know, I'm on the lacrosse team and they're off doing everything. And 90% of the time I'm like on the sidelines because I couldn't perform at their level, even though every bone in my body wanted to. Yeah. And so I always felt behind, or like that I was just making excuses a lot throughout high school. The nurse knew me very well, but I felt like she was annoyed with me. And so that was also really difficult. And you don't want to keep asking, you know, your parent to come in, pick you up. And so there was just like, I feel like there were certain times in my cycle that I wouldn't even tell my parents that it was like my cycle. I would just be like, I don't feel good today. And, you know, find a way to like work into not having to go in that day. And so it was very difficult. And I felt very isolated because I felt like a hypochondriac. I felt like I was delusional. I was crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, mm-hmm. I hear that all the time. I was very similar, but I also, like you kind of mentioned it, I felt like behind closed doors, everybody was going through this and no one was talking about it. But yeah. Also, like you said, like I did notice like, okay, all these people are doing like a lot of these things. I guess they're just not on their cycle right now. Like those would be some of my thoughts. And I just thought people were hiding it behind closed doors. I had no idea that it wasn't normal. And until there was a point in high school where like one of my girlfriends was like, what? Like when I was like, oh, I can't do XYZ because it's this time of the month. And she was like, really? And I feel like that was like one of the times I was like, maybe everybody doesn't. Maybe I'm one of those people who has this. So was there ever a time like that for you too, where you were like, gosh, this does feel like something is off?
So I went down the road of thinking that it was digestive issues, that I must have food sensitivities. And it started, I think I was like probably 16 that I was like, oh, I'm probably lactose intolerant like my grandpa, you know, like that makes sense. And then, so I like stopped eating dairy. And then I, you know, again, was diagnosed with celiac at 18. And so I stopped eating gluten, like immediately stopped. I didn't even hesitate. I was, you know, what 18-year-old was just like, yeah, but you know, if it alleviates the pain, I'm going to do whatever I can. Yeah. And so, you know, that was 2007. It was the easiest decision I ever made to stop eating gluten. And I also, because I was diagnosed with Lyme disease around the same time, I started to like go into health food stores. Like I was probably the only college student like that knew where the hippiest, crunchiest health food store was, because like Whole Foods wasn't like a big thing. And I don't even know if it was a thing on the East Coast yet. And I remember where it was. It had like 4 parking spots in downtown New Bedford. And like, it's probably still there. It was this great spot. But like that's the world I knew. It's like I was exploring all these foods and ingredients that none of my peers were eating. I had to apply at college to get a room with a kitchen before like I was the year that you get it. So most sophomores are still in the dorms that you go to the, you know, just to the
cafeteria
main. Yeah. I was like, what do we even call that? Yeah. The cafeteria. And I knew that I couldn't eat that food. And so, you know, sophomore, I went into the junior housing and stayed in that level. And it was great because I got to have, you know, peers come with me because you could bring someone with you. And so that was good. But like, I noticed like, all right, this is just food. It's just food. And so I went down this really deep dive. And I remember things like my partner at the time was like noticing like, oh, you're losing weight, your body's changing. And it was all like complimentary. But I was also like having a fever of like 103 at night because my body was fighting. Yeah. And so I was just like going between like being like culturally excited that I'm doing these things and my body is changing in this like vanity way, but I wasn't feeling any better. I was still like struggling. And I was like, well, maybe it's eggs. Maybe it's, I should go vegan. Like, so it continued like that into my 20s where I was just like exploring food and blaming food for all of my symptoms because that was the only thing that made sense to me.
Yeah. Do you feel like you missed out on like that traditional college experience?
100%. 100%. You know, I did study abroad and I did do like a semester in DC, but still like I was at these points where I was like, oh, I can't drink beer. I can't go here. I can't do that, you know? And if I do, like, you know, like when you have endo and you overextend yourself, like the next day you're like, you're down and out. And everyone's like, oh, did you drink too much? Are you hungover? And you're like, I don't know. Can you get hungover for one drink?
You know? Yep. Yeah. I would be like, I am so hungover compared to like all of my friends, and I've had two drinks and they had 20 or something.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
Like, how are they functioning this morning? So yeah, I totally get that. And I feel that, like, yeah, not having being able to have beer and like all of that stuff. It's really hard. Yeah.
Pizza.
Yeah. I know.
Just order chicken tenders at a restaurant. Like, yeah, no, it's like, oh, let me find the most expensive item because it's probably the only thing without gluten and dairy on it.
For sure. Or like my husband laughs because whenever we go out to eat or whatever, he's like, she's going to get a salad with chicken dressing on the side. Like, that's what I eat. That's all
yeah.
I eat.
Like, yeah, that's. We go. I literally just went out with girlfriends last week and that's exactly what I got. Yeah.
That's my go-to. So, but you did say when you went gluten-free, and obviously having celiac made you feel a lot better, but did you feel like overall inflammation-wise you felt better too?
Yeah, so I lost 30 pounds in two shoe sizes in 3 months. And so there was a big dramatic change in my body. But like I said, as soon as I kind of plateaued with the gluten, and I still had symptoms. And so I was just like, what is this? And then, you know, if you have celiac and it's been undiagnosed for a long time, it's really common that you're sensitive to dairy. But I had already like mostly eliminated dairy. And so I started becoming more aware of like those sneaky places where gluten and dairy hide. And I became like food obsessed, you know? But yeah, I didn't stop there though, because I knew there was something else. And so, like I said, I was like, oh, is it eggs? Is it this? Is it that? Is it soy? And truthfully, like a lot of those foods that are the top, you know, allergens, top inflammatory foods, like none of them were serving me because they were irritating this chronic illness that was hiding in my body.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of how you go through, college, you're just trying to figure that all out. You have these two diagnoses, but it's like your intuition still told you something was off.
Oh, 100%.
Feel well. And I'm sure your cycles were still just as heavy and painful and all.
Mm-hmm. But they were, quote unquote, normal because they were every 28 days. And so nothing's wrong with me, right? Like, oh, no, you're still like, yeah. And it's crazy because I was diagnosed with PCOS at the same time I was diagnosed with endo. And it was really funny because I thought, like, I knew something was wrong, like, you know, something was wrong. I don't even want to say wrong because, like, I'm not wrong, right? But, like, I knew something was off in my body that no one was catching. And PCOS is, like, the first thing to come up. Yeah. But, like, you know, it's – I don't have a lot of the classic signs of PCOS. I have insulin-resistant PCOS. And so it was – even when they discovered that, it was still like, oh, well, yeah, but, like, again, all there is diet.
Or birth control.
Oh, yeah. No.
Yeah.
So, which I had tons of issues with birth control.
I was going to say, like, in this time, what were the things that were being recommended to you outside of diet? I'm sure birth control was one of them.
Yep.
Any other things that were, like, kind of being pushed on you? Like, when you were going to the doctors in the ER and, like, all of this.
Yeah, no, it was a ton of gaslighting. So there was a ton of nothing's wrong with you. And then I wanted to go on birth control. And, you know, like any mom of millennials, I'm sure she was just like, she struggled with it a little bit. But I went on Yaz, which was recalled when I was in college. And I ended up with a heart palpitation. And yeah, and my immune system, like, this is when my I was seeing a midwife instead of a gynecologist, which I'm so grateful for, because she was one to pick up on things. She's like, oh, you're having different immune responses to things. And so she told me to stop doing things. She's like, I don't recommend you getting like the flu shot or even the meningitis shot when you go off to school, because something's going on with your immune system. Yeah. And I'm so grateful she said that, because, you know, there is a lot of research that when you have chronic illnesses like this, your body will actually reverse and you'll end up with the flu, with meningitis. And so she was the first one to kind of like validate me. And that felt really incredible. She still didn't have an answer. She was also the one that helped with the celiac and Lyme diagnosis. It wasn't primary care doctors or ER doctors. She caught Lyme. I like went to the ER and they didn't catch it. And so she was just like really aware of, you know, different signs. But she even, you know, knowing me since I was 10, she still didn't have the knowledge and the tools to even think it was endo.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But so great. I mean, so grateful that you had someone like that, though, that at least some of it. How wonderful.
She's amazing. Yeah.
Okay. So then after, what happens after this kind of, you're going through mm-hmm. this, how do you get to endo?
Yeah. So there's a little bit in grad school that I would like to share. So in grad school, I switched over. There was a period that we didn't use birth control because, again, like, our intuition is so radical. And like, my body was like, oh, I don't know. And so I stopped. I used the sponge as contraceptive. And I'm pretty sure I miscarried at that time. I had a chemical pregnancy. And then after that, I went on the NuvaRing. And I ended up having like skin reactions to the NuvaRing from, you know, because we're estrogen dominant and I didn't know I was estrogen dominant. Yeah. And they were like, oh, these are genital warts. And I'm like, I've had the same partner for years. And I was like, I'm pretty confident this isn't what it is. And they treated it like genital warts and like burned my labia. And I like, I knew it wasn't genital warts. Like I knew. I was like, I've been the same partner. Like, this isn't it. Like, yeah. And I was also like, I was a sex health educator. So like I was pretty comfortable. Like I was like, this doesn't make sense for like how it showed up. And like, yeah. So I know I wish I'd gone back to those doctors and had fine words with them, or even legal representation. But yeah, so that happened. And then fast forward to my like first real job after grad school, a friend that I was working with, she was an incredible woman, and she told me about Whole30. And so it was my first time like learning more about food sensitivities. And I dove so deep into Whole30. Like I was like, tell me everything. I did it. I did it multiple times over multiple, like for years. I like lived on Whole30. And then from Whole30, I went to Paleo AIP. And I did see a lot of incredible changes. And then I became so much more intuitive. I was like, I love coffee. But coffee is absolutely one of my triggers. And that's how I started to talk about it. Like these are the foods that make my body unhappy. And so it was way before my endo diagnosis that I started like noticing like those endo specific trigger foods, like alcohol. I remember the first time I realized wine was a huge issue, and, you know, whiskey and like all these other things. I was like, oop, one at a time, they were eliminated. And then when my husband and I decided to start having kids, it was May 2016. And I told him, I was like, you know, if we don't get pregnant within a year, like we should just like foster to adopt. And he agreed. And, but like there was something in me at that moment. Yeah. And I always felt like I knew that. Like I always knew. I don't know. I feel like at 18 being diagnosed with celiac and being told like, oh, that probably had an impact on, you know, your other bodily functions. But it was like, I just knew. And so we didn't get pregnant, but the doctors were still like, this doesn't make sense. Like everything's great. And then life happened and we moved and we moved from Maine to North Carolina, and my endo pain started getting worse and worse and worse. And so I got to the point where I was just like, if we adopt or have kid naturally, like I can't raise a kid in this condition. And so that's where I got to, where I was just like, all right, I need an answer.
Where it was started to get to like every single day you mm-hmm. do not feel well. Yeah. Cause I feel like it progresses to that. I want to back up really quick. So for people who are listening and you're like, what the heck is Whole30?
Yes.
Sam, tell us a little bit about I know what Whole30 is. I've done it too. But for people who are listening and maybe just want to explore what it is and AIP, if you could tell us a little bit about those things. And Paleo, I think, as most people know, you can Google it, but those specifically are more specialized.
Yeah. So Paleo is just like a way of eating, while Whole30 and AIP are protocols to help you learn what bodies serve your body. What foods serve your body. And so Whole30 is a lot lighter in terms of the rules. It might not seem like that when you read it, but AIP is a bit more intense. It stands for autoimmune protocol. But Whole30 is a very great introduction to exploring food sensitivities. So you eliminate the most common food sensitivities, as well as like additives and preservatives, for 30 days, and you give your body a break, because your body doesn't want you to feel ill. And so if you're eating a food maybe your whole life or often, it has a hard time communicating with you how that food actually makes you feel. And so when you eliminate it for 30 days, give your body like this big like break, it can then communicate with you. And so that's what Whole 30 is. And then AIP is the same thing, except for it's usually longer, 60, 90 days. And there's some different foods. There's a lot of overlapping foods, but AIP also eliminates like some spicy foods like peppers and stuff like that, tomatoes. And so it has a few more just based off of heavier autoimmune research. And both of them, though, you reintroduce foods one at a time so that you can let that food in your body, actually communicate with you symptoms, everything from skin rashes to GI issues to headaches to moodiness. And so it's very powerful. I find it way more powerful than a food sensitivity test.
Yeah. Thank you so much for explaining that. And yeah I do think they're very challenging to do, but it is very helpful to identify it. And I'm not a doctor, but I do think because of endo and maybe other autoimmune mm-hmm. disorders, that if you have multiple or you just have endo, it's like inflammation is the trigger for most of it, right? So maybe if we didn't have these things, we could eat and drink whatever we want and do whatever we want.
Yeah.
But I think the inflammation, these things then like trigger it again. This is just based on my own anecdotal information. So if anyone's like, this is not scientific, but I think that's why we have these sensitivities and things like that, is because we're already dealing with so much inflammation in our body.
And I don't know if have you read Beating Endo? Mm-mm. Yeah. So that book is written by a doc and a physical therapist, and they both talk about the science behind the foods. And so I've read multiple things about the science behind the foods. And so I do, again, not a doctor, but I do feel very strongly that you can elevate your experience in your body so much if you give your body the power to communicate with you, so that you can then have the freedom to decide like, oh, is eating these corn chips worth feeling bloated? Is eating this dairy worth having like intense GI issues? You know, whatever your experience is.
Yeah. I haven't read that, but I will. And I have seen that. The first book I actually picked up, it was I don't remember the name of it. It's a really thick book. And it was like one of the first endo books out there. And it was like nutrition for endometriosis, I believe. It's older.
Yeah.
And it's a very large book. And that's where I started to be like, oh, I shouldn't have dairy. I'm allergic to dairy, actually. And then I'm gluten intolerant, which is, very interesting.
Yeah. Yep.
and a lot of those same things trigger me too. And it's funny that you say like you can make the decision. People are always like, oh, don't you just cheat a little bit, just like a little cheese? And I was like, no, because it's not worth it. Like, no. Of course I want to eat it, but it's not worth feeling awful for the next 24 to potentially 48 hours. Like, it's just not worth it.
No. And sometimes I feel worse for longer. Yeah. So it's just, I would rather enjoy my lived experiences than eat this food that you think is delicious, because I've learned other foods that are delicious that serve my body.
For sure. Cashew cheese is amazing. Like,
yes.
It's so good.
Yes.
I think it's almost better. Like, anyway, we could go and probably talk about food a lot. Okay. So, we were just chatting about you did these things and you tested these things out, and you were on birth control, you stopped that.
Yeah.
What happens next?
Yes. So I think I said this earlier. A friend, it was during COVID, and a friend came over to actually get a Whole30 book from me. She was going to explore it. And it was a porch date, and I told her like, oh man, like this is, it's bad. I'm not feeling well. Like, I told her all my experiences, and she's like, it sounds like you have endo. And I was like, what is this? Like, I've never heard of it. It never came up in my Google searches, because, it just wasn't there yet. It was, but I didn't know the words, the terms, all those things. And so I immediately called a gynecologist's office in town. And the first one was like, oh, well, we can get you in 3 months. And I was like, I don't know if I'm like conveying how bad this is. And I know from experience going to the ER is going to do nothing. And like, I'm having a hard time like wanting to live in this body. And, my day-to-day experience is hard. Like, I can't function. I can't take care of myself properly. And so I called another doctor, Asheville Gynecology and Wellness, huge shout out to them. They got me in, my memory tells me it was the very next day. Like, I don't know for sure, but like, it was really fast.
Yeah.
Yes. And I go in and they were so compassionate, so loving. They just listened to me first. And while they were listening, like she is an endo warrior. She's had a hysterectomy and she was just like, yeah, I'm pretty confident this is what you have. And so they take me in to get an ultrasound right there. So grateful they had them right there. And they immediately, like, you know, you often can't see it on ultrasounds, but mine was so bad. It was right there. They could see huge chocolate cysts. It was the tech. And then the owner of the practice, who's also a gyno, and then my actual gyno. And they were, I started crying, of course, and they were all like, oh, we're so sorry. Like, so compassionate, such beautiful feminine energy. And I was just like, you literally just like finally gave me an answer. Like, yes, it's heartbreaking, but it's also like the best gift I've been given.
Yeah. It's like, you don't want that diagnosis, but you do, because you're like, I've been screaming since I was 10 that something was off.
Exactly.
And it's now just being validated.
Yeah, exactly. And then they told me the best surgeon in the area to, you know, because my ovaries had quite a bit of cysts on them. And they, it was a doctor that I had seen for fertility, and I knew I didn't like his personality. But he was the best option for saving my fallopian tubes and ovaries in our area. I didn't know about things like Nancy's Nook yet. I didn't know, you know, different endo experts. Like, if I had to get surgery again, I would travel for it. So I went back to him, didn't love my experience. There was a lot of red flags for, you know, there's not enough trauma-informed care. They don't, you know, he was immediately talking about like IVF afterwards, my 1% chance of ever having kids on my own. Like, it was really difficult. And then he had me sign like a form to, like, I was half naked on the table and for like surgery prep. And he was like, well, I need you to sign this saying pretty much that like I have legal ability to remove your fallopian tubes and ovaries if I need to. And I was like, so I got diagnosed in October through ultrasound and my surgery was going to be in January. And you didn't want to have a conversation about like freezing eggs or like anything between now and then. So I almost canceled my surgery. And the only reason I didn't was because of the amount of pain I was in. And I called his practice after I left that day to be like, I'm really uncomfortable. This is what I'm feeling. And the nurse was like, oh, he's the best doctor here though. He has the best bedside manner. And I'm just like, well, have you gone through 5 years of infertility and 20 years of chronic pain and then being told out of nowhere the day before surgery that you're likely to lose your ability to ever have children of your own? And so he did come in like that morning of the surgery and like he apologized and made me feel like, you know, 2% better. And I did keep both of my fallopian tubes and ovaries, but he did show me pictures and they looked like my internal organs looked like a Dalmatian, the amount of endo that was on them.
Yeah. And so he went in and removed as much of the lesions that he could.
Yes, he did leave. He did leave some in my bowels that he told me would be too difficult. I have since realized that an endo expert would have considered it critical to remove. Yeah. So that's one part that I still definitely navigate. And I do still get, you know, you live with it. So I do still get cysts, but I haven't had a second surgery yet.
Yeah. How are you feeling now?
Yeah. I would say for the first year and a half, it was like 90% better. It's like probably 80, 75% now. So I'm starting to notice shifts. I do believe that the dramatic lifestyle changes I've made from food and mindset and how I talk to my body and other tools I've used have made it so that it's not as bad. And I'm also way more in tune. You know, endo warriors often will rate something on a like scale of 4 in pain when it's really an 8, right? And so I'm starting to be more aware of that. Yeah. And so I'm trying to be more realistic with that. And then that, I think that's skewing my numbers a little bit. So if I was going off my numbers from before, I'd probably be like, I'm 100% better. But I'm like, no, it's still here.
And I don't think, and this, I hope this doesn't come off negative, but I don't think any of us are ever going to get to 100. I'd be really happy with 80. 80 is like 80 to 90. It's just, it's chronic, right? So I think you have to be realistic. And I know there was a long point in mine where I was just like, I'm going to just keep fighting till I get to 100.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to realize that that wasn't something that was possible. And I'm okay with it. You know, so you mentioned all of these changes. I know diet's part of it. Tell us what you've been doing to make you feel better. All the listeners, I'm sure, on the edge of their seats so they can start to hopefully feel better too.
Absolutely. Joyful movement. Don't do anything that doesn't bring you joy. And so you might hear from some people that it's like high intensity, but just like check in with your body. Does it feel good afterwards or do you feel exhausted? You shouldn't feel exhausted. I think our culture tells us otherwise, but that's just going to cause more inflammation and spike your endo symptoms more. So that's really important. Definitely food has been a big thing. I don't drink coffee. The only alcohol I drink is tequila, and it's very occasional. I really pay attention to sugar and, you know, gluten and dairy and soy and all of those things. So I'm really careful. My 100% no-gos are gluten and dairy, but the others, I have like a list of my, like, is it worth it? I also believe mindset is a big thing. So realizing that, like, you might not get the 100% that you imagined or deserve to have, because let's be frank, you deserve that, but you can have a different version of 100%. And so really being able to find spaces where you can have community and not live in isolation. Like, I always say this to my clients and to fellow endo warriors, like, as a human species, we're not meant to live in isolation. And when you don't tell other people and you suffer alone, that is solitary confinement and that is used as a punishment. And so don't do that to yourself. And it doesn't mean you have to say everything. It could just mean that you listen to a podcast like yours, or it can mean that you dive into one of the books we mentioned. But, you know, endo is 1 in 10 are diagnosed. You know, we don't even know how many aren't diagnosed. And so it's around us. You likely know someone, and you don't have to suffer alone. And I think that is a huge change in your experience in your body. I also am very aware of things that help my body naturally detox, everything from the excess estrogen to just the toxins in our environment. So like castor oil packs, going to the sauna, you know, really, like, I make sure that I take so much magnesium to just help with, you know, your body's functionality. I take omega-3s every day. And so, yeah, just exploring, like, what makes you feel better, kind of keep an inventory of, like, oh, this made me feel a little more depleted and this made me feel a little more energized, and adapt to that.
Yeah, I love that, Sam. And I love that you said, find your version of getting to 100. That is, that's awesome. I mean, I agree. That's so great. And agree about the isolation as much as like I speak out. And it's only been, I would say, within the past 5 years that I've really found like a group of people that I could text when I don't know if it was just that it was something that I didn't want to feel like a victim, or I can't describe what it was, but it was very hard for me to be vulnerable and admit like I'm scared right now, or I don't know if I should go to the ER because it won't do anything, but I'm in a level 10 pain and I'm home alone and I don't know what to do. Like, there were a lot of times that I went through that and I was alone and I didn't know who to turn to. But it's, even if you have one endo friend, or there's so many great Facebook groups and that you can reach out to and say, I'm in this like kind of crisis moment. And then they're there to celebrate the good things too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've definitely had those isolation moments. And I had, right before I had that friend that told me what she thought it was, I had another friend that said, the next time it happens, you know, and it was happening daily. So it was like, yeah, I can do that. She said, call me and describe the pain, because the pain, like, the amount of gaslighting I had experienced, it was like I didn't believe that that was my experience after the flare had ended. And so I couldn't properly describe how intense it was. And I would tell myself, like, it's not that bad. It's not that big of a deal. I'm fine. And when I called that friend, she told me, she's like, well, it sounds like you're in labor. And I was just like, that is a great, like, I've obviously never been in labor, but like, that makes so much sense for how I can describe the level of pain. Like, you have to move back and forth and rock back and forth. It comes in waves. Like, you, it's going through your whole body, you know, like all of those different experiences. And, you know, I have to do different types of breathing exercises to get through it. Sometimes I want heat. Sometimes I want cold, like, you know, all those different challenges. So that was really a powerful experience for me because she was able to like say it back to me when I was out of it.
Yeah. And I think you bring up a good point too, is I think the gaslighting, obviously, so we're told over and over and over, there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong. There's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
We start to think we're exaggerating. But then, like you said, when you're out of like the flare or the moment or the week of your cycle, and maybe you're having a good week, and then the next week you're having an awful week, it's very hard to even convince yourself, like, is this, am I really feeling this awful? Am I making this up? I can go where I have like an afternoon where I feel amazing, and then that evening it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I'm gonna make it through the night. And it can come on
that so fast. Quickly.
And I think it's very hard for other people who have never experienced mm-hmm. something like that to actually believe you. And I'm not saying that makes it okay. They should believe you and they should have empathy. But it is hard because you can look super normal 1 minute and be in a great place. And like, I could be like weightlifting at the gym and then come home like 4 hours later and feel awful. And it's like, oh, did I do that because I went to the gym? I don't know, but I don't feel good now, you know? So it's like, it's still, I think, very hard in that way, because like you said, there's the ebbs and flows of it. Right? Mm-hmm. There's just the times when you're rocking back and forth, and like, you literally, when you're in that type of pain, I know for me, like, there was no conceptualization. You're just like struggling to keep function happening.
Yeah, exactly.
When you come out of it, like you said, it's very hard to like mm-hmm. reflect back and be like, is that what just happened? So as much as I like know this and gone through this for many years, it's still hard to rationalize it, I guess.
Yeah. I think it's the curse of the invisible illness, because no one else can see it. And the only way they can even support you is if you communicate what you need from them. And sometimes you don't even know what you need. Like, again, like going back to like any video you've seen of a woman giving birth, right? Like they're not communicating, right? Yeah. I feel like it's very similar. Like my husband's gotten good at like knowing some things that do help. And so he'll just like bring things, but like, I often can't tell him what I need.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's super valid, and asking for help with something that I've also really struggled with, but now I will be like, I need this heating pad. I need water. I need you to leave me alone. I'm just lay on the bathroom floor. Like, but I very much struggled with that in the past too. So it's challenging. Well, so you've started some businesses because of all of this that you've learned and all you've been through. Tell us about what endo and, you know, Lyme and celiac and just having these like mm-hmm. chronic illnesses, how have they changed you to start these businesses, and what are they?
Yeah, absolutely. So I became a health coach, and it became into the fertility space quickly after that in 2020. So it was actually before my diagnosis that I started to realize, like, I've done a lot to improve my experience. I wasn't, although my endo pain was worse, like my GI pain was changing and I had a better relationship with food. And although my symptoms were still happening, like things had changed for me. And I'd also shared with some friends and family, and things were changing for them for different conditions, from asthma and eczema. And so I had imposter syndrome for years of like, who am I? I'm not a doctor. I'm not a nurse. Like, who am I to do this work? But then you had some extra time in 2020, and I filled it with becoming a certified coach. And I flew through the program because I already knew like 90% of the information. The only things I really needed to like gather was like the habits and the mindset of like training someone else to go through it. And so it was really fun. And I was quickly poached by somebody else, which was really cool. So I started my own business, but then I started working as a consultant. And so I work with an organization called Fab Fertile. They serve couples internationally. And we are a team, and each couple gets a fertility mindset coach and a functional practitioner. And we help them through their journey. Most of the people have like other conditions like low AMH, high FSH, which are all still connected to food, diet, lifestyle, missed healing opportunities. But we do have a fair amount of endo warriors. I'm the only one on endo with endo on the team. So I usually get those folks. But I also like other people that have had surgeries. And we also specialize in pregnancy loss because, you know, everything from chemical pregnancy to late stage pregnancy loss is really common when you have these conditions. So I've been doing that for about 3 years now. Incredible. And then, And then about 2 years ago, I started a matcha company.
So, okay. Tell us about this.
Yes. So my company is called Matcha Nude. And I started it because, you know, I'm trying to remember how many years ago it was now. I think it was like probably 6 or 7 years ago that I really started to recognize that coffee was an issue. I probably have known for over a decade, but I didn't want to admit it. I had this really, really great relationship with coffee. But I started to ask myself questions like, why did I start drinking coffee? Like, you know, it's just such a part of our culture. It's something that adults do. It's part of like, you know, America runs on Dunkin'. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. And so I just never, I never really questioned it. I was drinking higher quality, non-toxic, mold-free coffee, you know. I was doing, made all those changes. I was making it in a mocha pot. And like, it still wasn't like solving the gut issues and the flares that I would have from it. And so I dove into like all the alternatives. Well, if you're an endo babe, you may know that like there's chicory root in a lot of them, and chicory root is really like reactive to the gut if you have endo. I don't know the scientific reason for it, but I know a lot of women that have been like, no, thank you. So that like takes out Dandy Blend and a lot of those like tea blends that are supposed to be coffee alternatives. And then regular like loose leaf tea wasn't replacing like the culture or the coziness. Yeah. And then I discovered matcha, but I couldn't find a company that was meeting all of my standards until I found Matcha Nude was someone else's business. But she was doing like, she was doing really cool little markets in Canada. So she was doing like farmers markets, making matcha donuts and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I became a customer. I started doing like all these posts about it. I fell in love with the product, and she sold me the business 2 years ago.
Wow. Congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you.
Serendipity.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been amazing. And it's matcha changed so much for my gut health to my, like my anxiety changed, but it also like it's packed with antioxidants. So it's supporting my body with everything that it's challenged with.
Right. Okay. So what are all the products that you have? Like, do you ship? Like, how does it work?
Yeah. So we ship nationwide in the US, and we have subscription programs. We also wholesale to coffee shops and boutique stores across the country. You can buy us at Surfers Coffee in Hawaii. You can get us in North Carolina, Alaska, Washington State. And so, yeah, it's we're pretty wide, and we're continuing to grow, which is really awesome. There's two other women on the team with me, and one's my sister, and one's a great woman named Katie. We have tons of recipes online. We try really hard to have our recipes be really health forward, and we try to have our messaging on everything from our newsletter to our social media be a bit more of that like self-love, self-compassion, you know, the things that have really changed the way I live my life. And so I try to incorporate that there. And the biggest reason that Matcha Nude became, you know, such a big thing for me is coaching. I can serve people, but there's a limit to how many. And there's also a lot of people that will never either, if it's finances, if it's time, if it's just like their mental experience, like that will never be the container for them. And so with Matcha, you can just watch me on social media and I can talk to you or join my newsletter or decide to drink the matcha. And we can help you see that like, you deserve to thrive in your body and you don't need to just survive. And it might feel like all you can do is survive because you don't have the community or you haven't found the right tools for you and your body. But together in this space, we can all find that.
Incredible. Incredible. That is so exciting. Congratulations. Seriously.
Thank you.
You've really turned something that is very challenging into two very positive things in helping other people. Seriously. Yes. You should be very just proud of yourself because that's amazing.
Thank you. Thank you for doing this podcast. You know, like I told you before we started hitting record, like, I wish I had more of this before because I probably would have self-diagnosed earlier. But I do believe for my own journey, like this did happen so that I could, like, I was the person to be able to move into this space in this way. And I can't touch everyone with endo or everyone with fertility challenges or gut issues. But the more that I speak up, that we don't have to suffer and live in isolation with these invisible illnesses, the more I hope that even if it's just a handful of people can come out and say, like, I don't need to suffer anymore. And then I've won.
Yeah, I'm sure you're already helping so many people too. So that's incredible. Thank you. Very, very great. Thank you for coming on and just talking to us about all of this and telling us your story and what you're doing to help other people. Is there anything else you want to add or tips or anything before we wrap up?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate, like, you deserve to feel well in your body. And when you start taking actions, you know, you're sending a ripple through the world that says everyone deserves to do this. So when you say, I'm going to take care of myself, I'm going to set a boundary for myself or change my relationship with food or mindset or whatever, if there's just one other person that sees you do that, and you impact their decision to do that for themselves, it's just going to continue through. Like, you never know who's watching as you make that decision. And, you know, the majority of people that have endo do identify as women, and women typically have a hard time taking care of themselves because we live in a world that has said that is selfish. But it is the most selfless thing. When I was suffering and not feeling well, rocking back on the floor, I could not give to anyone. I could not take care of my dogs. I could not be the partner I wanted to be. My friends were like, what's going on? You know, you're canceling plans or whatever. But as soon as I learned what I needed and learned to speak up and learned to start advocating for myself, I became the partner my husband deserves. I became the dog mom my, you know, fur babies deserve. And I became a much better friend because I put myself first, filled my cup so that then they could benefit from the overflow.
Absolutely. Great, great words of advice. And I echo exactly what you've said. So advocate for yourself, taking care of yourself. All of those things are so, so important to be able to just be your best version of you. And it's very hard. I know people might be listening to this and you're in a lot of pain and you're feeling mm-hmm. super sick, but taking some of those just small steps, it doesn't have to be everything in one day or one week, just chip away at it the best that you can.
And remember the things that bring you joy. You know, this journey of having a chronic illness, a chronic invisible illness is so difficult, and we can put our lives on pause and we can forget. You know, this is something I see with my clients all the time. I've experienced myself. Like, you forget what brings you joy and what puts a smile on your face. And, like, you know, if it's a piece of paper on your fridge that you're just like, oh, that made me happy. Because, you know, keeping a visible inventory, I feel like, allows us to be able to go back to that when we've just had, like, one of the worst flares of our lives. You can be like, all right, I'm going to go sit down and watch really crappy TV, because I know that's going to fill my cup, or I'm going to crochet or ask a friend to come over and fold my laundry with me. Like, whatever you need, you know, you'll be able to get to that sooner if you start taking inventory and remember that you deserve to have joyful experiences.
Absolutely. And in those moments where it's like really, really bad, something that helps me to remember is like, this will pass. I will feel better. And that's when you start to really lean into filling your cup on those times that you feel better, so you have that when it's the more challenging time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sam, thank you so much for your wise words and everything that you're doing. Absolutely incredible. I'm so grateful to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Cycle Podcast. Don't forget to rate us in Google or Spotify. If you would like to give us a 5-star rating, we would really appreciate that. And also just really wanted to say thank you again for your time and listening to the Endo Stories to help build awareness, get more recognition for this disease. And I know all of the patients that have shared their story really appreciate you being here. With that being said, I always have to have my medical disclaimer. This podcast is not intended for the purpose of providing medical advice. All information, content, and material of this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to serve or substitute for the consultation, diagnosis, and/or medical treatment of a qualified physician or healthcare provider. Thank you so much for understanding this medical disclaimer, and I'm wishing you a pain-free day. Take care.